So hello again and welcome to another episode of Quick Question with Soren and Daniel, the podcast where two best friends and comedy writers ask each other questions and give each other answers. I am one half of that podcast, author of How to Fight Presidents and staff writer for Last Week Tonight with John Oliver and the last unmarried wife guy, Daniel O'Brien, joined as always by my co-host, Mr. Soren Bowie. Soren, say hello.
Hello, everybody. I'm Soren Bowie. I am a writer for American Dad, technically a co-producer at this point, which sounds pretty good, I think. Makes me sound like I invented the show or like had a hand in it. Not the case. Not the case at all. I'm just riding the coattails of other people, standing on the backs of giants.
It is. There's something. Oh, you're still talking about. This is still your introduction? All right.
Yeah. I mean, I don't really have anything else other than I'm a dad and like a homeowner and some of that or other boring bullshit.
Sure. It's certainly like, even though I'm technically in the biz, which is short for business, I still, whenever I'm watching a show, I have no idea what any of the credits mean. And you see a show that's been on for a long time, like The Office, and it just seems like the amount of producers grow and grow, and then it like, because in the beginning there's like one or two, and then suddenly it's like co-producer John Krasinski, co-executive producer Steve Carell, co-producer Jenna Fischer, co-producer Rainn Wilson, and just like people move into these positions so that like by the end of the credits there's like 14 producers and co-producers on a show.
Yeah, that's why people have asked very good questions before. I've seen on Twitter where they're like, why are there like 12 EPs on a show? Why are there 12 executive producers? How is that possible? And it's like, well, that's just the way that in most shows, that's how a contract works, in which you guaranteed an advance into certain levels. And so like you start as a staff writer, you go into a story editor, then an executive story editor, then you become a co-producer and then a producer and then a supervising producer. And like, then there's like all these just dumb names that really just mean you've just been a writer on the show for this many years.
Yeah.
It's like actually, counting the rings of a tree afterwards. Like, well, you get to co-produce and you're like, okay, I can count backwards and see when you started.
It's extra funny that producer as a title sounds so divorced from writer as a title that it really does seem like you had a hand in the show, that like if you're there just a few more years from now, then it'll suddenly be created by Soren Bowie. Like you get promoted to that position.
It feels actually a lot like Cracked, where we were writers. We were columnists and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Those are kind of sexy titles. And then gradually we were like, you were a supervising editor.
Senior management for Demand Media.
Senior manager. We're like, you're still doing a lot of the same work, but now also you have some other people who you have to take care of and make sure that they're feeling okay every day at their job.
Yeah.
And it's you get promoted into these roles that don't make any sense because you've been there for so long and they're not allowed to just pay somebody who's creative. That's not how it works.
I remember there was one time where Jack promoted me and I was like, I'd like to keep my title. Like, I like head writer. That's a really cool title. And he was like, we can't. We have to call you senior manager or the system won't allow you to get a raise. I was like, oh, all right. Probably senior manager, content. This blows.
Whoever sees that in payroll, like they see that a creative is being paid and they have to sound the alarm.
Yeah.
They're like, this man is being paid this much to write? That's bullshit. Yeah.
Unacceptable.
I write emails every day. Thanks to BetterHelp for supporting Quick Question. For 10% off your first month, go to betterhelp.com/QQ. Start living a better life today.
We're going to get into the show. I don't know if anyone can hear. This is not a COVID update, just a brief life update before we get into the show. I don't know if anyone can hear like a bounce in my voice or a pep in my step. I have again relocated to a beloved quiet beach town in New Jersey, and I'm just over the moon giddy while I'm here.
Is it the same beach town?
If I ever named the beach town in a previous episode, then no, it's a different one.
Well, so you built up such a repertoire with all the people there, the community that lived there. I was hoping maybe you'd go back and dive right back in, but I understand if you need to move on.
But actually it is the same town, and I've run into people that I met the last time I was here, and it's just it's very thrilling because I was here in the winter, which is a totally different vibe, obviously. And now there are a lot of tourists, and also COVID restrictions have been lifted, so there's a lot of life in general. And it was crucial to me pretty early on in my stay here that I find someone who remembers me from my last stay here, so I can put some distance between myself and what I'm considering like the actual tourists, because I'm not a tourist.
Right. Oh, that's a big
deal. I'm from here. Yeah.
I'm with you 100% on that. I remember you're on my team when I say this. I traveled abroad for
sure.
A semester of school, and then I was just like riding around on the Eurorail, which is a train that just travels around Europe, and I didn't know where I was going. I didn't have a plan, but I would show up in a city and I'd be like, all right, well, let's figure this shit out. And I hated that I had this giant backpack on my back, because it just, like, it immediately was a sign that said, you don't belong here. And that feeling is something I try to avoid it every single turn in my life of,
yeah,
I'm not actually, I'm awkward. I'm not supposed to be here. So I would cram this thing away and I would try and figure out the city. And in a few days, like, I could spend 3 days in Barcelona. I know the train system at that point. I know the restaurant that I like. And at that point, I'm on the train and I'm like, I know where I'm going. This is very exciting. And like, I don't even have to look at the stops and like see other people in there, like looking at the train map and everything. And I was like, oh, you fucking rookies. And just the feeling of feeling like you belong there, even after 72 hours, was thrilling to me.
I was certainly like desperation overcompensating when I first got back here and went to my old familiar coffee shop and saw a barista that was not the one that I remembered from before. And like, I'm wasting no time. I was like, is Gia still working here? Gia, I know Gia. Is Gia still working here? And is she still studying medicine on the side? Okay, I belong here, everyone.
That's good. That's good for her. How are her kids? that's good though. I'm really pleased that you're running into people that remember you, and so you can set yourself apart from the other tourists.
Yeah. But now let's get into the show where we ask each other questions. Soren, I had a quick question for you.
Mm-hmm.
So, listeners of the show, DLB's devotees and the sworn swords of Soren, they probably recall that in a previous episode you talked about kind of a harrowing time for yourself where your daughter bumped her dome on an open bathroom drawer, and it was scary. Yeah. And also you broke your toe, and that was harrowing. Yeah. And that's in the past now. And as of this recording, we just passed Father's Day weekend. So now that you're out of the woods on that, I just wanted to know, Soren, how was your Father's Day weekend?
Thank you so much for asking. Well, I don't know if you can notice anything different about me. I'll do a little turn here. Mm-hmm. I am, maybe you notice that I'm a little lighter, a little sleeker.
Okay.
I got rid of an organ over Father's Day. I got rid of my appendix.
Mazel.
And now I've got, I don't know how I feel about them yet, but I got some scars, which is something I was weaning to do for a while now. You know, during COVID, you can't decide, should I do it? Shouldn't I?
Yeah.
I don't want to regret it. Like, am I going to get drunk and get myself some scars? And so finally I just went, you know, I'm pulling the trigger. I'm going to get some scars. And now I have three fun little scars on my tummy. And
Three.
Yeah. So I'll tell you why in a second. But I started to feel really terrible on Friday. And I didn't know what it was. I was just like, oh, my stomach hurts in a way that I don't recognize. It didn't feel like muscles. It didn't also feel like a stomach ache or anything. It was something totally unrecognizable, to the point where it only felt comfortable when I was lying on my stomach or putting pressure on it. And I didn't get it. And I was like, maybe this will just go away. And then that night, it bothered me some more. And I took some Advil, woke up in the morning, and actually felt pretty good. And I was like, okay, well, assuming that this thing goes away, I'll work out later today. If it doesn't, then I don't know. I'll go to urgent care, I guess. And it just started to get worse and worse. So I went to urgent care and they said, oh yeah. They started like poking me. I laid on the table and they just start poking around. And I'm talking to the woman as she's poking, and all of a sudden they do that. And she goes, oh, that's not good. And I was like, what do you mean? She's like, I think that you might have appendicitis. You have to go to the ER right now. And if you do have it, you have to get it removed right now. On a day where I was just like planning to go like a little jaunt over to urgent care again, where, you know, a place where they know me by name now, where I can walk in and be like, hey, how's Nina? Is she still working the front desk, or did she finally move back there with a big computer? I got there. They're like, yeah, this is probably appendicitis, you're going to have to go to the ER. And then I got it just like, I'm going to run down this ER trip for you because it is a nightmare. It's just awful there. Do we have time for this?
Yeah, I think we got time.
I went to the ER. Let me back up 15 years.
Okay, let me also back up. We have time for some of this.
Let me back up 15 years. I went to the ER, this specific ER. I'm actually not even going to say the name because I don't want to just put them on blast because some of what they did was actually really good. But I went to this ER, had a sprained ankle, and it had started to turn kind of blue. And I thought, I don't want this to be a situation where the circulation is being cut off. I should go to the ER and just get this checked out. Went there. A doctor, it took forever to be seen because in the ER it always takes forever. A doctor finally came and looked at it. Didn't even get like a room or anything. Just continued sitting in the waiting room, and a doctor came out. And he had a crew with him. He had the young students who were like shadowing him. And he looks at it and then touches a scab over on my ankle. And he's like, what's this from? And I was like, oh, that's from like weeks before. And you can tell, like, it's already like the edges of it have fallen off and everything. And he goes, this isn't a sprained ankle. This is an infection. And I was like, no, I mean, I remember doing it. It's a sprained ankle. And he's like, then your sprained ankle is infected from this wound. And I was like, oh. And so he put me on an IV. I sat in this hospital for several hours watching Matrix Reloaded with an IV, and then had to take a bunch of medication too, and paid just an exorbitant amount of money for this ER visit where I also had to just be like an inpatient, I don't know, inpatient prices for having the IV and everything and sitting there with it dripping into my arm. So then I had to go to a return visit, and the new doctor there looked at my ankle and went, this is a sprained ankle. And I said, yeah, I fucking know. He's like, "What the antibiotics that you're taking, please stop taking them. He stopped just short of saying, I'm sorry about this. Yeah. He was just like, so you understand that a sprain, it has redness. There's some heat to it. It's swollen. With an infection, there's some redness. There's heat to it. It's swollen. You can understand the mistake. And never said I'm sorry or anything like that. And I was too young to think, why would they?
And then I feel like he's also, there's like an undercurrent of like, also, you got to know, these med students, they're so young. They're so fucking cool. They'll eat you alive. You got to seem like one of those TV doctors or they'll just eat you alive. You have to be like, boom, that's lupus, or else you look like such a fraud. So that guy, you really did a huge service to that other doctor. You made him, you let him save face by saying a sprained ankle was an infection. It made him look like a genius, and those kids respected him for like 12 more hours.
Yes. And so I go back to the same, I didn't even realize it was the same hospital at first. I just walk into the waiting room, and immediately I'm like, I've been in this waiting room. I have a feeling about this waiting room, and it's not a good one. And I've been to other doctors since then. I have this issue of being misdiagnosed with things. I don't trust hospitals. It's just the thing that I've got. This is just one case of me being misdiagnosed. So I don't generally go to them. I go to this hospital, I get in the ER. I just have to sit there and wait for my blood test. 2 hours later, I get to do a blood test. But in the meantime, I should mention that at the urgent care, they had said, we're sending you over there. Please don't eat or drink anything, because if they have to do surgery, you can't have had any food or water in your system or anything. No juice, no water, nothing. And so I was like, okay. 2 hours later, get my blood test. 2 hours go by till they don't even get a result. All they do is they call me back in. They're like, all right, we need you to wait over in here now. And so they put me in a hallway on a bed because all the rooms are completely overflowed. And so I'm just in a hallway with a bunch of other sick people and waiting, and then nobody's really telling me anything. 4.5 hours go by. Oof. And then this fucking doctor comes out, and it's the same doctor from 15 years ago.
Oh.
And I am at this point already a little upset because these are interrogation tactics generally. Like, I'm now not being told anything. I've been waiting all this time. I'm not allowed to have food or water. I wasn't even allowed to pee for a long period of time because they were like, we're going to need to do a urine sample, but we're not quite ready to see you yet. So please hold on to it. So I'm just like, I feel like cattle in a way that's not good, where people are telling me what to do. No one's telling me anything, yeah, but I'm also still not allowed to do anything. So I'm already pretty livid, and he comes up and he's like, okay, let's see what we got. And a nurse at this point has told me to put on these scrubs, not scrubs, these, this hospital gown. And I'm, you know, a minute I change into it in the bathroom, I walk out and I'm like, I can't walk in either direction in this thing because this hall is crowded with people.
Yeah.
And they're all going to see my butt. As like in a Kathy cartoon. And so I'm kind of like holding it shut and I go and I sit down on the bed and he comes over and he's like, all right, well, let's take a look. And you lift up the gown. And I was like, do you really want me to do that? He's like, yeah. And so I lifted up. He's like, took your pants and underwear off, huh? And I was like, motherfucker, somebody tell me what to do. Somebody just tell me what to do. And he nicely puts the sheet over me at that point and then feels around. And he's like, yeah, I think this might be appendicitis. We could give you a CT scan and know for sure. Or I could just send you up to surgery and we can get it taken out. And I was like, so you would take it out even if it wasn't actually appendicitis? He's like, yeah, we can get it out quick. I was like, no, not you. I'm not doing it. And I was like, no, well, please do the CT scan. He's like, okay. A little crabby, huh? Is it because you're not having any food or water? And I was like, motherfucker. The doctor asked if I was crabby because I wasn't eating and drinking, like toying with me.
Yeah.
So I still, like, this guy has just lived up to his reputation in my mind at every single turn, and I hate him.
That was a real, 15 years ago, was a real learning opportunity for this doctor, and he just let it whiz right by.
And so I just hate this guy. And the nurse who's with him is like, I'm being short with both of them, and I'm not being great at answering the questions. I'm not my normal self where I'm like, yes, no, I'm giving you exactly the information that you need. I'm kind of like looking around a lot because I'm trying to decide if I should run or like leave this hospital right away. Mm-hmm. I'm like, maybe it's worth it for me to just go to another hospital because I don't want to be around this guy. And I stick around. He orders a CT scan. I go in. They pump me full of the dye so they can see something in my veins, I guess. And I go in and out of it, in and out of it. And then they're like, okay, now wait. And so I wait for another 4 hours. And then a nurse comes and says, yes, you have an inflamed appendix. We're going to need to take it out. But first, we got to draw a bunch of blood. And listeners, I don't know if you're familiar with my phobia of blood, but it's, boy, it's still going strong. And so they hooked me up to they've already put me on an IV to put the dye in me, and they're trying to get the blood out of that. It's not working. They're like squeezing it and kind of poking at it and stuff like that, and it's not working. And they're like, all right, we're going to have to do it out of your hands. I was like, okay, let's just get it. Let's just get it done. And so I'm giving them my hands and looking away. And this doctor comes in at one point. He's like, oh, you're lucky it's her, man. You don't like needles? And I was like, no. He's like, man, I would just jab you. And man, I was like, okay.
As a sidebar, I like that your blood is still under your control and on your side, that it's resistant to coming out. Because it's like, no way, man. He hates that shit. He hates seeing us. So we're staying put.
Yeah. And the reason I don't like it is because it's mine. I made that. Yeah. I keep it. I'm not just going to give it away. Like, that point of it is to stay in my body. And they were, it was a nightmare. I was getting pricked and pulled in every direction. And then this doctor came in to talk to me about the surgery, and I stopped him and I was like, I'm really sorry. I'm not going to be able to pay attention to anything you're saying to me because I'm just thinking about this needle that's in my hand right now. And he's like, oh, okay then. And walked away in a way that was like, Oh, look at this pussy. Or not, I guess that wasn't really the subtext. There's a subtext in my mind, but it was a, wow, okay, don't have to be rude about it kind of thing. And I just wanted to shout at everybody. I wanted to be so mad with everyone because by this point I had been there since 3 o'clock and it's now about 10 o'clock. And I haven't been allowed to have any food or water. And when people are like, well, you don't have to be rude. They have that kind of attitude about it. I'm like, I know I'm so far beyond that. Like, I was so cool when I went to urgent care. You should have seen me. I was jiving, even though I hurt in my stomach. I was still like doing jokes. I was telling them about how I knew about appendicitis because I watched it in Garfield and Friends when I was young, and John got it and Garfield to save him. And it was killing. Like, my jokes were doing great. They love me at that urgent care. But now I'm over it. Like, I can't be here. And, they do all the stuff, then they take me upstairs to surgery. There's a woman hands me some wet wipes. She's like, wipe yourself down. And I was like, what does that mean? She's like, we need you to do your abdomen and we need you to do your genitals. And I was like, okay. And then I look over and I'm not in a room. I'm in like a partitioned area that's got other room, like adjoining beds near me. And I start to take off my underwear and there's this, I don't know, 60, 65 year old man in the room next to me, not asleep, but head turned over on the pillow, just watching me.
No.
Like, is it okay if I shut that? And she goes, yeah, okay. Not like, oh my God, yes, I'm so sorry or anything like that. Just like, I mean, if you want kind of thing. And I was like, this is the fucking craziest hospital I've ever been to. This can't be the way it normally is.
And I do think that is a hallmark of hospitals in my experience, that like when I broke my wrist and had surgery on that a couple years ago, I also had to get inexplicably nude to put on my hospital gown, even though like all of the business was going to be happening at my wrist. I was still, you know, like you, shuffling down a hallway, trying to close this unclosable thing, and then like lying in a bed knowing that at any moment now, anyone could see the whole fucking show. And there's just like this desensitization that all doctors and nurses go through. And I understand that that must be an essential part of the training, to see bodies as just like things that they're working on, the way that you would look at a car or like a carpentry project or something like that. But I think in addition to that very essential training for them, there should be like some secondary training that's like, but by the way, your patients don't feel that way. Your patients still, right, have some kind of respect for modesty and base level of like decency and dignity. We don't all walk into the hospital and just like, I'm just meat now.
So when I was sitting in the hallway, there was another woman who a doctor came along and started talking to her and asking her questions about what was going on. She was in severe pain and she was saying she couldn't even sit on the toilet by herself because she couldn't wipe. And like, he goes, I'm sorry, I didn't hear that. And he made her say it again. And I'm hearing this all from my bed and I'm like, I shouldn't be privy to this conversation.
Yeah.
Sure. Maybe a nurse should be there at doctors. Like, they all have some semblance of privacy, but I don't, I'm going to say it on a podcast. Don't say this stuff in front of me, and please don't say, make me say my stuff in front of you. Like, this is crazy. Yeah, they just have lost all sense of what it means to have this own, you know, a personal privacy, or yeah, like a sense of self there. So they finally get me all checked in. I have to answer just tons of questions about my last, about a living will and stuff like that. And if I want they asked me if I wanted any religious practices adhered to during my surgery. And then they asked if I wanted someone to come. I can't remember what kind of religious man, not a deacon, but like somebody who would come and talk to you in the military when you're about to die. What's that guy?
In the military? Chaplain?
Chaplain. Yeah, they asked if I wanted a chaplain. And I was like, what for? And they're like, I don't know. And then I pushed it harder and he's like, I think it's in case it's for, you know, more invasive surgeries where there's the chance that you might die. But we have to offer it for every surgery in that case. Yeah. And I was like, I don't know.
Also,
I
mean, you know, like we bought the chaplain. We have him on retainer. He's got nothing to do. Just let him talk to you.
But by the time I get up to surgery prep, though, it's now 1 or 2 in the morning. And there was a floating chance that I may not even get to surgery till the next morning. And I was really scared about that because I hadn't eaten or drink anything and I wasn't going to be allowed to. And I was like, that sounds like an awful long time to go without water. Does human body, should I look that up? Should I see if that's okay? And nobody seemed bothered by it at all. And then I found out that it was going to happen that night. And I was like, so I got a second wind. I was like, yes. And now I wasn't around a bunch of other people. Everybody was telling me things, like the surgeon was there and then the anesthetician. I don't remember.
Anesthesiologist?
Yeah, that's the one. He was there and he's talking to me. And at this point, like I'm back in like jokey mode. And so I'm doing these long bits that sometimes are paying off and other times very not at all, where they take my blood pressure maybe 25 times while I was there. And each time they take it, they tell me what my blood pressure was. And that means nothing to me. The like 180 over 90 or whatever the numbers are don't mean shit to me. So like they'll do it and they'll tell me and I'll be like, that's a good one, isn't it? Or is that a good one? And they'd be like, yeah, it's pretty good. And I'd be like, okay, well, like if you graded me on it, what kind of grade would that be? Like, I don't know, like a B. And I was like, oh, I should have studied. And
these are fun bits like to do. Yeah.
And then, The one that got the biggest laugh was they came in, they took my blood pressure. They're like, that's pretty good for about to get surgery. Usually people are a little more jumpy. And I was like, no, I feel pretty good. Let's get these guts out. And and that got a nice laugh, which made me feel nice. Went to the operating room. They were great. I mean, they told me like everything that I would expect after the surgery and where I would have pain and stuff like that. Weird places up in my shoulder. Yeah. I was going to have pain and in my throat. I can go over why those things happen in a little while because it's actually kind of interesting. But they took me into surgery. They're like, can you get onto the table yourself? And I was like, hell yeah, I can. Because I feel like a hero at this point. Like I'm walking around with a gross gut in me that needs to come out. And it's coming out tonight. This is good. So I climb onto the table. They're like, we're going to have you, we're going to actually change out the anesthetician. And I was like, oh, okay. I sort of had built this rapport with this guy. The guy was like, it's okay. This is the one that trained me. And I was like, oh, okay, great. Perfect. Let's have him then.
Should have had him from the start.
yeah. Fuck off. Why do I need you? And they put the gas on me. They gave me, first they just said it was oxygen. They tricked me. They go, this is just some oxygen. Please breathe deep. And then I don't remember anything after that. I woke up and I was all shorn. they shaved me while I was asleep, which is a pretty funny prank. and like, just like a, not shave me completely, but like, you know, shave me just to where they needed to work. So now I have this very funny pubic hairline.
Sure.
And woke up, looked at my stomach, and I've got three little bandages on it. They're not huge. They're only like 2 or 3 inches each. And what they do is it's a laparoscopic surgery. So one of them, I think they put a camera in. One of them they use to pump up my stomach full of air. And then the other one goes in and does the dirty work and cuts off the offending organ. And then afterwards, the other thing I noticed was that I was pregnant. Like my belly was massively swollen.
From the air?
Yeah. So they pump you full of air and they don't get it all out afterwards. It doesn't all come out immediately. It like comes out over days, I guess. Yeah. Or just moves into other parts of your body, which is part of the reason your shoulder gets sore, I guess, is that that air just like slips up through you as you're sitting up. And then it kind of gathers up in your shoulder and it's just something extra in there that then just causes havoc and makes you very, very sore in your shoulder.
And so, does that leave through like, were you feeling extra gassy or anything like that? Or is that just like air that leaves your body through your pores?
I guess it must leave some other way.
Yeah.
I assume it must leave some other way because it's not actually going into an area where I could just fart it out anyway. It's like going into the actual stomach itself underneath the muscles. And I don't totally know how it gets out. But like they also said, you're not going to be able to like shit or pee for a while because when we pump your stomach full like this, it's pushing all your guts up into your chest a little bit more and everything just kind of like shuts down because it doesn't know what's going on. And so like they're very interested in knowing when you start to go to the bathroom again because that means that your body's like, okay, I can return to normal. Everything's going to be okay. And then you're allowed to leave the hospital. But the operating team came in the next morning to check on me. They said, we got it out.
You spent the whole night there.
Well, yeah, because the surgery didn't happen till... So I got to the hospital maybe around 3. Surgery didn't happen till about 2:45 in the morning.
Got it.
So I went that far without food or water or anything and felt very brave because I did that. And then, yeah, they came in. The operating team said everything went well. How are you feeling? Good. They said, here's what we did. We went in, we took it out. And I was like, and how was it? And they were like, what? And I was like, was it a good one? Was it a good appendix? And they're like, you know, it was inflamed and kind of juicy and gross. Is that what you want to hear? I was like, good answer. Yes. Thank you for playing the game. And they wouldn't let me see it. I guess they throw it away immediately.
Yeah, but, of course that was going to be my next question.
Yeah, I wanted to. They're like, we don't have it. I was like, yeah, I get it. And so almost immediately they sent me home.
Did you explain to them just how much money you could get for that appendix? On like Twitter?
God, if I could encapsulate it and give it to people as a pill, a little bit of me, I bet I could get, you know, I bet I could get $15 for that.
I bet you can get way more for your appendix. There are people who give like money that they earned doing their jobs to listen to this podcast.
That's true. Yeah. Oh, it could have been a Patreon special. Just cutting off little bisections of it that I gave away. Hey, folks, when you take a minute out of your day and you think about what interferes most with your happiness or your pursuit of happiness and what it keeps you from achieving your goals, try to isolate what those things are, and then BetterHelp might be able to help. They can assess your needs and match you with your own licensed professional therapist. You connect in a safe and private online environment, so it's obviously convenient, and then you can start communicating in under 48 hours, so it's very quick as well. All without ever having to sit in an uncomfortable waiting room. Hell, you don't even have to put on pants. I'm not really sure how other therapists feel about that in the real world, if you need to put on pants there, but here, it's basically encouraged. BetterHelp is committed to facilitating great therapeutic matches so that they make it easy and free to change counselors if you need to. If you're not happy with who you're talking to, you're just not clicking, it's very easy to just move on to somebody else. BetterHelp is also more affordable than traditional offline counseling, and financial aid is available. It's available worldwide, but be careful because BetterHelp offers a broad range of expertise, but some of it may not be available in your area. So really check in first. Anything you share on here, completely confidential. BetterHelp is convenient, it's professional, and it's affordable. You can also check out testimonials from other people that are posted daily on their site at BetterHelp Reviews. You can find out how other people are actually enjoying this. Before I buy anything online, I go through and I read every single review. I have to know that I'm getting the very best. And you can do that with BetterHelp. You can go through and see the testimonials from other people and make sure that who you're talking to is the person you want to be talking to. Licensed professional counselors who specialize in depression, stress, anxiety, sleeping, trauma, anger, grief, self-esteem, sexual or gender identity, everything under the sun. In fact, so many people have been using BetterHelp, they're recruiting additional counselors in all 50 states right now. Start living a happier life today. Get 10% off your first month at betterhelp.com/QQ. Join over 1 million people who have taken charge of their mental health. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/QQ for 10% off your first month. Thanks, BetterHelp. So they came in, they checked on me, and they're like, well, there's no rush, obviously, to get out of here. Do try to walk around when you can, and then we'll try and, you know, get you out of here by this afternoon. And I was like, okay, great. I get up and I walk around. I go into the bathroom and I pee, and I'm like, this is great. I walk back to the bed, and this nurse comes in, and he goes, okay, We actually need this room. They're going to let you go. It was like being at a restaurant on a Friday, like where they're like, just try to turn over tables as quick as possible.
Yeah. I'm going to just put this bill here. No rush. I'm just putting the check in front of you.
He came in with like a care package. Basically, there's a water bottle, a blanket, and a mask. And he's like, okay, they're discharging you. So when you're ready, you can change back into your clothes here. I was like, oh, okay then. They wouldn't let me drive home. There's some sort of rule about that after you have anesthesia. So my wife had to come get me, and then we had to figure out a shuffle to come back and get the car. But ultimately, I got this thing removed. I felt fucking terrible afterwards.
Yeah.
Because it's surgery, and felt way worse than I did even going in. Couldn't like sit up, couldn't do a lot of things, couldn't lift my daughter, couldn't bend over. Everything kind of hurt. I went home and slept for a very long time. And then over the last few days, I've just been like forcing myself to get out, move around as much as like the pain will allow me to. And now feeling pretty good. I think I'm going to make it out of this thing. But I took the bandages off. I've seen the wounds and they're so gross.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. They're just because they've got crusted blood on them, and that whatever that yellow stuff is they do to sterilize the entire work environment is still kind of there. And it makes me very queasy to look at them. But one of them's right on the waistband of my pants, whenever I like underwear and pants, whenever
that
I need to walk around. Yeah. So if I did drive the other day and I just held the seatbelt out at about an inch and a half away from me and kind of shuffled my pants way, way down while I drove. So it's really convenient and terrible. And it was on Father's Day, which was supposed to be my day. And all of this is to say it was a really terrible and not fun experience, but now it's done. And I don't think I'll ever need it.
That's good. So I've got some follow-ups.
Yeah, go ahead.
The going back to the urgent care, do you think appendicitis is something that the medical professional can feel externally, or do you think her belief that you had appendicitis was based on your reaction to the poking?
It was reaction to the poking, because what happens apparently is these are the symptoms. You get a really bad stomach ache, and then it kind of moves. It shifts from being a general stomach ache to being just down in the little white right quadrant of your abdomen. And then pressure there hurts really badly. And pressure, where they put pressure on and then take the finger away, it actually hurts more when they take the finger away and like it rebounds. That's a good sign that you've got it. But then there's also stuff that's like fever, chills, other things that you would have if you had an inflamed or infected organ that your body would be, you know, setting up the red flags. And I wasn't getting any of those. All I was getting was the pain. So that's why it took maybe so long to kind of make sure that it was appendicitis, because the only thing I had was this pain. Yeah. And they're like, well, there's some other stuff there.
That's the kind of stuff that always worries me with all medical issues, when it's not something that they can immediately see or like test for with a drop of blood or a bit of saliva. Anything that's reliant on the way that you answer questions is terrifying to me, because I have no real sense of like where a pain is located or like what kind of pain it is. Like, my brother has talked to me before about like, is it like a muscle pain that you're experiencing, or is it like a joint thing, or is it a bone thing? I'm like, I don't know, man. It's in some part of my body. All right, is it like a pulsing or a stinging? You know what? Forget it. Never mind. I'm fine. I'm a bad writer. I don't know how to describe things.
That's very much how I felt on Friday when like my wife was like, because I was lying down a lot, and I think she was getting a little pissed off because I wasn't helping at all. I wasn't helping with dinner or anything. All I was doing was lying there with a pillow under my stomach, like lying on my face. And she's like, well, so what's going on? And I was like, I don't know. It's just like, when I sit up, it's hard to breathe because whatever there's going on in there, and I can't tell what it is. I'm just sort of hoping it goes away. And she was like, okay.
Yeah.
And then being at the doctor's office, I mean, the fact that I went in the first place is like a huge step forward for me.
Yeah.
My plan was to just work out that day. The Friday that it hurt, I just went and worked out. And I was like, maybe I can get rid of this. Saturday, I was like, maybe I'll just do the same thing. This will be the one that knocks it out of me. And then finally, I was like, you know what? You'd feel really stupid if this was something serious and you didn't go. And you don't have, there's no other obligation I had that day. My in-laws were in town and they had the kids. And so I was like, I'm just going to go. And so I went to the hospital, and thank God I did.
And that's, I'm the same way with being very reluctant to go to doctors. As listeners of the show will know that, like, I felt the same way when I broke my wrist and went to the ER and they were asking me questions about it. I just want to be like, listen, you don't know me, but you just have to trust me. I almost didn't come here. I almost went to brunch. You have to just know what a big deal it is that I walked in the door, and then like adjust all of your expectations to that. And like, I still might leave. You should know that if you ask me any more invasive questions, I might just go.
It would also be nice if you could give a qualifier to the doctor to be like, listen, my ego is not going to let me tell you what's actually like the amount of pain that I'm in. I'm sorry. It's just the kind of human that I am. You're going to ask me and I'm going to say 4 or 5, because anything above that sounds like something more serious. And I don't want you thinking I'm a pussy.
I'm in here because I'm in a lot of pain and I want to get that resolved. But more than anything else, I want to make sure you're having a good time. So just know, like, that's my priority today. So adjust all of your expectations around that.
Yeah, like when I went into the ER and they were kind of testing me out and poking around at me and stuff, they were saying, here's the symptoms that you'd ordinarily be having. You'd be having diarrhea, you'd be vomiting, you might be a little dizzy, and you're not having any of those. And you don't seem like you're in a lot of pain. And I was like, here's the barrier. I don't know how to show you that I'm in pain, because that's not a thing I'd like to do. I'm going to just tell you it hurts and you need to believe me, rather than like looking at my face or anything like that, trying to determine based on my wincing. Like, just please, I say it hurts and you just have to say, okay, well, he's putting on a brave face. That's very nice.
Yeah.
Because that's who I am.
Yeah. You know, it would be helpful if you would just wheel in someone who is very open about their pain, and then I could look at them and tell you that mine is worse. That would be very helpful to me.
There's some aspects of the story that I haven't told you that yet. that I no, want
to
tell you now.
I brought nothing to the podcast today, so please.
Good. There was a moment that really had me laughing. So there was a nice nurse when I was getting all prepped for surgery named Albert. And I noticed just when he was walking around that Albert didn't wear, usually nurses wear really comfortable shoes because they're on their feet the whole day. And he's wearing hiking boots. And he had his scrubs tucked into his hiking boots. And I was like, well, I haven't never seen that before. And I just sort of like mentally put it away. And then Albert's going through my medical history and he's like, okay, so are you on any medication? I said, no. He's like, what's this hydrocortisone? And I was like, what? He's like, oh, never mind. That's from 2015. And I was like, I don't even know what that is. Is that for itch, like a bug bite? And he's like, not really for a bug bite. It says here that you're supposed to take it rectally 2 times a day. And I was like, what? He's like, I have a prescription here for hydrocortisone and you were to apply it rectally 2 times a day. And I was like, and there's all kinds of other people around me and everything. I was like, Albert, are you fucking with me? He's like, no, it's here. And he was dead serious that there was some prescription in 2015 for a hydrocortisone that I was supposed to be applying to my butt twice a day. And I was like, I don't know where this is coming from, Albert.
Yeah. Also, Albert, I don't know if this is going to impact the surgery at all, but the doctor should know. I have not been doing that.
Yeah. I have not been doing this at all. And I was like trying to rack my brain thinking, let's see, 2015. That's when my son was born. I would have been at cracked still. What is this? Like, what could this have possibly been? And I still couldn't figure it out. And then I remember coming down from my drugs afterwards. They put you in another room to kind of wake you up and let you come out of it, your stupor. And I felt pretty good. Albert saw me lift my head up and he came over and started talking to me. And I asked him about his hiking boots and whether he hikes in around the area and like what he does, and started telling him about some hikes that I liked and still feeling a little strange and probably not making a lot of sense. And then Albert said that he goes, that hydrocortisone. And I go, yeah. And he goes, I was fucking with you. And I was like, thank you, Albert. And I'm so pleased that I have that memory. I mean, so much of that moment, like so much of that time is missing where I'm like waking up. I have no idea how long that actually took.
Yeah.
But
it's a very disorienting process.
Saying that really pleased me. It was really funny to hear him say that. But yeah, I had my in-laws here, which was really, really lucky because I couldn't do anything. When I got home and I was just completely useless, and they really pulled a lot of weight making meals and keeping the house clean and keeping my kids entertained.
Yeah.
It was nice.
That's very handy. Shout out to in-laws.
Shout out to the in-laws.
That's it's wild how there are a lot of beats that are similar to my experience getting surgery on my wrist a couple years ago of just like you get there at a certain time and then there's so much waiting around, and like the prep that you do when they're like, hey, don't eat or drink this many hours in advance of surgery. It's like, great, I got it. I will not eat or drink this many hours in advance of surgery. And then they tack on all of those bonus hours where it was like, no. I planned for the normal amount that we discussed. This was not the plan at all, but they don't care. It's like being on a film set where you just like, hurry up and wait. We just want bodies around until we're ready to call you to
right.
set, where set is surgery. And I remember just lying in that bed in a gown but naked underneath and being very aware of my own nudity and being unhappy about it and like waiting hours and hours and hours, so much so that, same as you, I went through like 2 different rounds of anesthesiologists, where the first one comes up and was like, hey, I'm Brian, I'm going to be an anesthesiologist. I'm going to explain to you what's going to happen. This is the name of the drug that we're going to put in you. You need to consent to all these things and fill out this form, and I'm going to explain the risks, and then we should be good to go. And then hours go by, and he's like, all right, I'm going to leave, and now you're going to meet new anesthesiologists and go through this whole thing. And I'm just like sitting there watching the nurse shift change. I was like, this surgery was a mistake. I was really pumped to do this at 11 a.m. It's now 8:30. I think I'm fine. I'll just have a cast for the rest of my life.
It just wears down your character so quickly.
Yeah.
In a way that, like, you go in mentally prepared for whatever's about to happen. And in our cases, surgery can be a big deal. My surgery probably was not. I think it's pretty routine for for most surgeons, but I'm terrified. I don't go to surgery every single day, and I don't like the idea of people cutting me open. It freaks me out. And so I'm like mentally preparing myself this entire time for this. And at every turn, it's just them wearing you down emotionally.
Yeah.
To be like, and not necessarily doing it on purpose either. It's just like, this is just the way the system works. And you need to be the most raw and vulnerable you are when you go into surgery. Yeah. It's like, well, why is that necessary? Why do I have to be like that? But it's over. It's done. I got out of there. I was in and out quick. And now I just have these terrible bruises and scars.
Yeah. Do they give you any, not necessarily physical therapy, I guess, but like anything, do they just sort of say like, don't do anything your body won't allow you to do? Or is there specific stuff that you have to stay away from?
Yeah, they gave me stuff they said walk. You can do that as pain allows. But then the nurse also, as I was leaving, was going through this page and he's like, okay, don't lift. And I was like, yeah, no, I wouldn't go lift. And he's like, what? And I was like, I won't go lift. And he goes, what do you mean go lift? And I was like, we're talking about two different things. What do you mean? He's like, don't lift anything. And I was like, oh, yes. Okay, I won't do that. When he said don't lift, my thought was, don't go to the gym and go lift weights right now.
Like, yeah, immediately, no kidding, dummy. Immediately your thought is, this guy recognizes that you are a lifter.
Yeah, thank you for noticing. I can see a lot more muscle tone now that I'm all shorn. Thank you also for noticing. But I won't lift. So they gave me very specific things, like with bending over, you have to be really careful. And then also with lifting anything up, I'm not allowed to lift much. I do have been lifting my daughter some, and she weighs maybe like 20 pounds, but that hasn't been a real issue yet, except I can keep her in my arms until she doesn't want to be there anymore. And her strategy for getting out of your arms is to push off with her wrists and her knees at the same time.
Sure.
Just like push away from you. And where her knee falls is right at the top surgical scar. Yeah. And so she just pushes right on that thing and I just double over. Okay, you can get down.
Do you have to go back to get the stitches out?
No. So this is really cool. They do the interior stitches, those ones that just dissolve inside your muscles.
Yeah.
Where they stitch up your abs. And then on the outside, they don't do stitches. They do like a glue. They seal it together, just the skin together with a kind of glue. So you don't get those big dot scars across you or across the incision mark. You just have the incision mark itself.
That's kind of cool.
It's much harder to pop these too. It just like the skin stays kind of flexible. So you're not in a real danger of like stretching too. I'm not in danger of like reaching my arms up too high and having one of them just split or anything like that. These just stay in place until it, you know, heals.
That's great. Have I told you that the when I had to take my own stitches out?
I can't remember if we talked about it on the podcast, but was it because you couldn't see your doctor? You couldn't get an appointment with him?
Yes. So it was like the two times that I've had surgery in my adult life were both remarkably similar, and that like an accident was caused on one side of the country while I lived on the other side of the country. And so there was like a whole lot of confusion with doctors and recovery and insurance. This is the one that I've mentioned a little bit on this episode of the podcast, was my wrist surgery, which I broke my wrist when I was in California, but was living in New Jersey at the time. So all of my recovery happened in New Jersey with the aid of my brother. The other one before this, years ago, I was visiting my family in Jersey while living in California over the holidays, split my head open a tiny bit above my eyebrow and had to get stitches from the emergency room there, and then went back to LA and couldn't go back to the original doctor and didn't think to just like find some other, I don't know if you could just like call a doctor and be like, hey, take my stitches out
right
now. That's like not what's in it for them, you know?
well, what's their beak in that circumstance?
I didn't have any doctor friends or anything like that. So I just talked to my parents and looked up some YouTube stuff and just took stitches out of my fucking eyebrow. And it was fine.
I remember
fine.
That injury.
Huh?
I remember that injury. Yeah. You came back from Christmas break with that.
Yeah, I made a bit out of it. I decided when I got back from Christmas break with stitches in my forehead that I was never going to tell any two people the same story for how it happened.
That ends up just looking like you were domestically abused. That's exactly the scenario.
Yeah, in retrospect, there was no payoff to that joke. It's just me being a stupid little imp, just a little clown who's like, how can I make the world more interesting for me right now? You know what would be a fun creative challenge is don't plan in advance and just like fly by the seat of your pants anytime anyone asks you what happened. Come up with a new explanation.
You're the Joker.
Yeah, yeah. So
The last time I spent time in a hospital, you were actually there. It's when I was on my bachelor party when I split my face open. And I had the same thing where I got stitches in my nose right at the top of the bridge. And at the time, I went to a doctor who hated me, I think. There was a doctor that the first time I showed up there to get a physical, he was like, what are you doing here? And I was like, I just want to make sure I'm okay. He's like, you look fine. And he was clearly a doctor for much older people and just didn't want me there. And also, I don't think he was his clientele either. It was like exclusively Armenian. And I think he saw the name Soren, which can be Armenian, and was like, yeah, I'll take this patient. And then when he saw me, he was like, you, what are you doing? And I had to go back to him to get the stitches out. And he would not make an appointment with me. And I was like, okay, how hard can it be? It's probably just a knot somewhere, right? If I just cut below the knot. And didn't look up any YouTube videos, just tried to do it on my own and cut it, couldn't get them out. And then finally it was like, I accidentally cut my own stitches and I need to come in. And I came in, he was so mad. He was just so mad taking them out of my face. Why did you do this? And finally got them out. But it was the same circumstance where like, I was like, I don't need to go to a doctor for this. I could just do it myself. Sounds like yours was a lot more successful though.
I really like the idea of angry put upon doctor as a comedy character. Like this, the same energy that teenagers working at a movie theater or a restaurant have. Just like a complete absolute disgust with the idea of having patients. Like you went to work hoping no one was gonna come in today.
Yeah, like, reaching for that syringe and it weighs 10 pounds. Like, just dragging it off the tray instead of picking it up.
Thought this was going to be a light day, but it's this guy and his fucking appendix. It's the weekend.
But yeah, that's my appendix story. It was in the middle of it. I was texting my wife a lot and complaining. I was a big baby about it.
There's very little to do but complain. There's so much waiting around.
Yeah. And it's all I could think about, too. And then at a certain point, I was just turning my phone off completely so I could turn it back on if I had to tell her I was going to surgery, because I still didn't know if I had appendicitis or not during my waiting around. And I didn't have a phone, didn't have anything. So it's just me staring at the ceiling like a fucking character from Catch 22 in the hospital. Just like, wow, time goes by slow here. And doing nothing, just looking at the cracks in the ceiling. It was awful.
Yeah.
Anyway, I was complaining to my wife about that. I would turn my phone back on just to text her a bunch, send her a flurry of texts, and then turn it off, which I'm sure was not helpful for her.
Sure.
Because she's worried about me, and I'm telling her how terrible things are, and then won't answer my phone.
Yeah. Thankfully, my mom came with me for my wrist surgery. She flew out to California for that. Not that it was like your surgery, not like a serious risk of anything, but you know, it is always helpful to have someone close by. Mm-hmm. And she says, the first thing I said when I came out of anesthesia was I asked for a beer, which was very on brand, but I think an even more on brand thing for me was like, cause as you're coming out of anesthesia, you wake up like 7 or 8 times. You keep waking up for what feels like the first time. And then you're like back out. So it's very disorienting. But I remember in the first window of what felt like real clarity for me was like, wake up. I would like my underwear back, please. Like, that was a thought that, like, even throughout surgery, I was still very conscious of my own nudity. And just like, as soon as I'm allowed to, I'm getting that underwear back. Like, I don't care. You could tell me there were complications in the surgery. It's like, that's fine. So it sounds like the surgery's done then. Okay, underwear, please.
I foresaw some sort of nightmare scenario where when I was coming out of the drugs, so I could see other people being wheeled out from surgery. We actually got bumped at one point because there was a more emergency surgery than me where I was just in the prep area for a long time. Finally, I saw that person come out and they're doing a lot of gabbing. Like, they're talking as they're being wheeled out. And then they're doing a lot of talking to the nurses. And I was like, oh, they're just high out of their minds. Wouldn't it be terrible if I come out of there, I finally get into a lucid state, and everyone's just sort of a little more uncomfortable around me. Nobody really likes me much. I must have said something and I don't know what it is. And none of the nurses or doctors will tell me because it's that bad. And I just like foresaw this scenario that could happen. And I was like, all right, you got to mentally prepare. What are the things you want to talk about? Let's go through talking points you can go over.
Right. You have all these nurses and doctors who are like, hey, man, people say all kinds of crazy things, so we're not gonna hold it against you. But no one's making eye contact with you.
Yeah, they go into it beforehand with that prep of like, listen, whatever you say, it's no big deal. And then afterwards, things are just different. Yeah. Like, you clearly have said something beyond even their realm of what they thought was possible.
Yeah. Yeah, we checked the in all of our years of being doctors, no one has ever, because of anesthesia, screamed the N-word. Except you.
The surgeon quit.
We don't really know what to do about this
anymore. He lost his passion for the job because of something you said.
Well, I think that'll probably do us for this episode, unless you have any questions for me.
No, that's good.
Great.
I'll ask you on the next one.
Terrific. Well, Soren, I think I speak for everyone when I say we're very happy that this surgery was a success, and we wish you continued health and rehabilitation and whatnot. And if you'd like to tell Soren that himself, you can do it on Twitter at Soren_LTD. You can also reach me at DOB_INC. You can email the show at QQ with Soren and Daniel at gmail.com, or find the show on Twitter at twitter.com/QQ_Soren. And Dan, you can try to email, find, and hire our executive producer, co-producer Gabe Harder at GabeHarder.com. We also have a Patreon that you can find with just the bare amount of searching online, and we hope you do that. We just released one of our Patreon exclusive episodes where we answer questions from you, our patrons, and it's super fun for us to do, and your money is definitely going somewhere.
It didn't get a laugh in the moment, Dan, but I wanted to let you know that I appreciate that you called Gabe our co-producer and executive producer.
Oh, thanks, buddy. Yeah, more than laughs. I like being told directly that a thing was funny.
I want to be told I'm a good boy at every turn. That's what I learned the most from Father's Day this year. Tell me at every turn, oh, he's a good boy. He's doing this well. All right, bye.
All right, bye.